You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network,
and beyond.
Your team every day.
Justin McGuire. Hey guys, we all know about the struggles of the Orioles this year, and in fact, that's been the topic of many of our podcast episodes so far. We've talked about the team's struggles on the field, off the field, and we've talked about trade rumors. We've talked about what the team's going to do about Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette, all that sort of thing. And you're probably sick of hearing about it. Right now, there's not a lot of fun to talk about on the field, that's for sure. Hopefully, that's going to change. They're going to start playing better, and we're going to have some more interesting things to talk about. In the meantime, though, I'd like to hear from you guys about what you'd like to hear about. I'd love to get some topic suggestions, some guest suggestions on things that we can talk about, things that are a little more positive, a little more interesting than just rehashing losses day after day and talking about Manny Machado trade rumors. So if you have ideas for guests or topics, please feel free to email me. It's LockedOnOrioles@gmail.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnOrioles, and you can send suggestions there as well. I'm on Twitter as well, at JMcGuireMLB. So any of those places would be good to send ideas. We'd love to hear from you. All right, let's get on with today's episode. We're joined today by Jason Foster of Sporting News. We had a wide-ranging discussion on a number of Orioles-related topics, but one of the main things we talked about is, what are some good reasons for people to keep watching this team this year? I'm not sure we came up with any great answers, but it was a fun conversation, and we'll get to it in just a second.
Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Jason Foster of Sporting News. I've run out of ways to say that the Orioles are terrible. I've run out of ways to say that they should trade Manny Machado and Adam Jones and anybody else they can get for, you know, at the trade deadline. As a national observer, let me just ask you this first of all. Are you surprised that the Orioles are this bad?
Yes. I don't think anyone expected them to be this bad. And when you look at last year's team, they won 75 games, you know, not great, but not pointing to this kind of start. I mean, you would expect them to maybe be a little slow out of the gate or whatever, but 8-26 is almost shocking. I mean, we were talking before we started here that nobody thought that the Marlins would not be the worst team basically for the whole season. And they still might be, but right now, the Orioles and the Reds have the dubious distinction of having the worst records in baseball, even worse than the Marlins. And that's just a big surprise. And, I mean, the Orioles are already 17 games out as we talk here. And that's just – even if they turn it around somehow, that kind of deficit is just so hard to overcome. So I think – I don't think that anyone would say that they expected this from the Orioles.
We were talking earlier before I started recording, and both of us are old enough to remember 1988 when the Orioles started the year 0-21. This year, obviously, their record is not as bad, but the sense of hopelessness and misery is seemingly similar. So, do you think this team is going to be like that team and lose 107 games? Does it seem like they're that bad to you?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you mentioned that they were on pace for 130 losses or whatever, and the 88 team lost, what was it, 106 or 108? What was it?
They were 54 and 107.
Well, this team is certainly on track for that, at least. But like I said, when you look at their season last year and just the offense, I mean, look at all the firepower they had in the lineup. They had, like, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but it was like five or six guys, maybe even more, who had at least 20 homers. You had Machado doing his thing and Adam Jones doing his thing. And this year it's basically just Machado, and he's doing just what everyone expects him to do. And you mentioned that 88 team, obviously, it had two first ballot Hall of Famers in the everyday lineup. I think Machado is, you know, on track to be a Hall of Famer, but I don't know, when you look at the 2018 Orioles versus the 1988 Orioles, it's hard to really compare them, I guess, but perhaps it's just it can just be chalked up to just everything going wrong at once. Because when you look at their offensive stats, they're, you know, in the bottom half of the league, or sometimes second to last or last in various categories on the pitching side. You know, they've allowed second most runs and they have the second highest batting average against. So it could just be that April and now early May have just been a time when everything has gone wrong at the same time, and that it'll eventually correct itself, because I would still be surprised to see this team lose 100 plus games. That's not to say that they won't do it. It could just be an off year, but it's so surprising that I don't see it maintaining at this pace.
Now, you know, on this podcast, we have regularly been talking about the fact that they need to trade Manny Machado. We've been talking about the fact they need to trade Adam Jones. And I think, you know, pretty much every fan that I'm aware of is in agreement with that. Nobody is deluding themselves into thinking that this team has anything left to play for this season. The other question that's come up quite a bit is, you know, Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter, both of whom have their contracts up at the end of the year. What to do about those two? You know, there's a lot going on here for the Orioles. But I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask, because we have covered so much of that material in other ones, is if you're an Orioles fan or if you're an Orioles podcast, what are some reasons to keep watching this team? What are some positives that the Orioles can get out of this year, if anything? I know you're a Braves fan. You've been through some terrible seasons over the years, including 1988 when the Braves were almost as bad as the Orioles. What do you hold on to as a fan at a time when a team is really terrible?
Well, if they're claiming to be rebuilding, you look toward that and you kind of say it's bad now, but we've been promised that after two or three years or whatever it is, that things are going to start to be good again. And we've seen that with the Braves this year, perhaps a year early even, and they may end up having a bad year, you know, kind of the reverse of the Orioles. They might just have been overachieving early and they might level out. But watching the Braves the past few years, you always heard about these names coming up through the minors, whether it was Ronald Acuna or Dansby Swanson or, you know, Sean Newcomb or Mike Soroka or some of the other pitchers. With the Orioles, though, there's not a whole lot of that. Their farm system is pretty consistently ranked in the bottom third of the league. And they've got, you know, a couple of, you know, solid prospects to look forward to, like Austin Hayes, or on the pitching side, Hunter Harvey. But it's not like a team like the Braves or the Astros or the Cubs in their recent rebuilds, where they kind of intentionally built up this farm system, which is why it kind of goes to, when you ask what is there to look forward to as a fan, well, right now I would say Orioles fans should appreciate Manny Machado while they have him. And I know they would say that they definitely appreciate him already, but I think because he's definitely going to be gone after this season, perhaps in the middle of this season, really appreciate Manny Machado and also Adam Jones. Just appreciate getting to watch them play. And in Machado's case, you could be watching an all-time great. I mean, when it's all said and done, Machado could very well be a first ballot Hall of Famer. So appreciate him there. But if they trade him, or if they trade Adam Jones, or both, really pay attention to the prospects. I mean, really dig into the minor leagues. Get yourself a subscription to MILB.TV or whatever it is so you can keep track of these guys. Because for fans of rebuilding teams, the main draw is the farm system. I mean, you still watch it at the major league level because that's your habit and they're your team. But the real excitement comes when you see these guys in the minor leagues, like really showing that they're getting close. Like last year, Braves fans were really hyped about Ronald Acuna, and he tore it up through all the farm system last year, and he had that great spring training this year, and now he's doing great things in the majors. So you got to have one or two guys who you kind of look at and say, that's the future. And right at this minute, the Orioles don't really have anyone that you look at and say, that's definitely the future. They've got, like I said, some solid guys, but no one who you're going to say, that's our franchise. So if they trade Machado and Jones, they're going to have to get two or three of those guys who are, you can look to and say, hey, in a couple of years, they're going to be here and they're going to be doing great things.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, with the Orioles, that guy may already be on the roster, and that's Dylan Bundy. I mean, I think he's the guy who people might be pointing to and saying he is our, you know, our future star. He has shown the ability to be a true ace. His last couple starts haven't been good, but earlier than that, he was you know, one of the best pitchers in the league. And he's shown that ability, and he needs to show it consistently. But certainly that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have someone to look at and get to watch them develop, I mean, that's always exciting, especially when you see them showing the glimpses of what their ceiling could be. And, you know, to go back to the Braves, you know, way back in their last rebuild of the late 80s was when they brought up and developed Smoltz and Glavin and Steve Avery. And watching those guys come up and do their thing at the major league level, it, they didn't all kind of arrive, so to speak, at the same time. They're always associated together. But, you know, Smoltz and Glavin had two or three years where they were, you know, mediocre to very bad before they really took off. And but once they did, you know, it was very exciting. And I think a guy like Bundy could be that guy for the Orioles. Like you said, you watch him develop and you watch him like really come into his own as a major league pitcher. And it gets to the point where when you talk about things to watch, is you just you can't wait to watch him pitch. And, you know, that's appointment TV. Even when he pitches poorly, as young pitchers will as they develop, you still can get excited about watching him do his thing. And when you're looking for things to get excited about, even something like that can go a long way in terms of keeping you interested throughout a season.
The Orioles have not had much to be positive about this year. We know Manny Machado is having a good year, but even that comes with a dose of reality in the fact that he's likely to be traded sooner rather than later. And if even if he's not traded, he'll be gone at the end of the year. The one positive out of this year that is kind of came out of nowhere and has been kind of unreservedly positive is the relief pitcher Richard Blyer. And I know this guy doesn't have much of a national profile, but I know even looking at his stats, it's pretty unbelievable what he's done so far.
Yeah, I was talking to you before we started recording, and I had not paid any attention to Richard Blyer so far, but I looked at his stats for the season, and he's already at 1.2 wins above replacement, which is really good for early May. And you look at got a ERA right now of 0.46, a WHIP of 0.864. I mean, these are strong numbers, and if he can keep this up, he's just another guy who you can kind of look at and say, well, whenever he pitches, I'm going to watch because he's helping make this fun. And he's not a young guy; he's 31. So I mean, who knows whether this is going to be sustainable for him or whatever, but for the time being, he's definitely worth watching and keeping an eye on, even for someone like me at the national level, because baseball always seems to produce these guys who seem to come out of nowhere and just put on a great year, and then before you know it, they're one of the top names in the game. So we'll see whether that happens with Blyer.
The thing with Blyer is I think there's a strong chance that he's going to be the Orioles' lone All-Star representative if Manny Machado gets traded before the All-Star break, because it's hard to see anybody else on this team being an All-Star, honestly. I mean, nobody else has put – you know, Bundy maybe if he rebounds and starts pitching the way he was at the beginning of the year. But really, it's hard to see anybody else being an All-Star, and we know there's a rule that every team has to have an All-Star.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you have to consider it is still early May. And I mean, baseball is just, it's so weird because, I mean, someone like Trey Mancini, for example, he's not had that great of a start. But baseball is the kind of sport where today he could just go on a, you know, streak where he goes, you know, 18 of 20 or whatever and pops five or six homers and then his season has turned around. And that can happen with any of the guys, really. So, I mean, yeah, at the moment, the Orioles don't have strong all-star prospects, but there's still a long way to go before the All-Star break. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a guy like Mancini or Adam Jones or even Chris Davis to just kind of turn it back around and get back into their own and get back to what we're used to seeing from them. So I know it's bleak right now, but and sometimes it's hard for fans to kind of have that perspective of, you know, it's a long season and all that. But I mean, I would, like I said at the beginning, you look back at the stats these guys put up last year. I mean, there's really no reason to believe that this year they're going to be that far off their career totals. I mean, it's possible, I guess, but I mean, I wouldn't bet on them continuing at this bleak level of offense.
Well, yeah, it's hard to believe how bad it's been. I mean, it's just, like I said, just hard to believe. It's the only word for it because they've been abysmal. And you know, if they were mediocre or even worse than mediocre, it wouldn't shock me that much. But to be essentially the worst offense in all of baseball, which is what they've been, it is pretty shocking to me. Another positive, I guess, that the Orioles have is that they have a nice stadium, huh? That's something to think about.
I was just going to make a joke that, you know, that shiny new ballpark, Camden Yards, it's been, what, 25 years now?
Well, it's 26, but yeah, it's still a very nice ballpark, though. It's not shiny and new anymore, but it's still a great fan experience. I was reading in Ken Rosenthal in Ken Rosenthal's column in The Athletic, he was mentioning the attendance woes that the Orioles have had and how it's really gotten bad. And, of course, it's just going to keep getting worse now that they're so bad. But I guess that's another negative thing, so let's stay away from that for the time being. But this is a conversation I've had with people before, but attendance should probably be a concern to the Orioles long term. And I think since the Nationals moved to Washington, it has been, you know, going down steadily over the years. And it's, you know, it hasn't helped that they had bad teams a lot of those years. But really, they've had a 5-year run where they were pretty good, and attendance still didn't seem to go up very much. In fact, I think it went down if I read Rosenthal's column correctly. So anyway, there's another thing to be negative about.
Well, don't the Orioles have the promotion this year where, like, kids 9 and under get in for free or something like that?
Yeah, there's select games that is the case. And that's a positive. They're trying, I think, to bring in the younger fans. So we'll count that as a positive. let me ask you this, though. I mean, this is something that, again, we've talked about on the podcast quite a bit. Buck Showalter, like I mentioned, his contract is up at the end of this year. And traditionally, obviously, when a team gets off to this bad a start, people start talking about the manager. Do you think Buck Showalter is in danger of getting fired before the end of the year?
I mean, I would say he's probably just as likely as anyone else in this situation. But at the same time, it's Buck Showalter, and he's widely regarded as one of the best managers, one of the smartest baseball guys in the whole sport. So, I mean, on the one hand, it could be a matter of, you know, the Orioles just think, yeah, it's Buck and he's done a great job, but we just need some new energy or whatever. So I could see that happening. But at the same time, you know, any team would love to have Buck Showalter as their manager, I think. So if the Orioles do choose to part ways with him, some other team is going to get a great manager, and it could be that the Orioles would look back in a year or two and say, well, boy, that was a mistake. But you also have to consider, I mean, I don't know Buck Showalter. I've never met him. So I don't know, like, how much he wants to stick around in Baltimore. I mean, looking toward the immediate future, I don't know any manager who would say, yeah, I'm going to stick around for another 4 or 5 years of losing with the hope that I'm going to, you know, get to manage a winner at the end. I just don't know where he is career-wise in terms of where he wants to be. And if him getting fired would be something that would really bother him, or if he also feels like he needs a clean break. But to answer your question, I would be a little surprised if they fired him during the season. If he does end up losing, I would see it happening more after the season, where they just don't renew his contract, because he's done a lot for the Orioles and for the Baltimore community. So I think it would be, you know, fair, I guess. And I know it's a business and it's not supposed to be fair, but in my opinion, it would be fair to kind of let him finish out the season and kind of go out that way rather than having him fired in midseason.
I tweeted this out on Monday. But to me, it makes no sense for the Orioles to let either Buck Showalter or Dan Duquette go at this point unless they have some sort of a long-term plan in effect to replace them. And with Duquette, it's possible, I mean, that Brady Anderson is what they're looking at as the long-term guy to head up the front office, and he's already in the warehouse. If they were to let Duquette go now, they could just slide Brady Anderson into that slot. That might make some sense. But with Buck Showalter, if it's just a question of replacing him with John Russell or one of their coaches just to ride out the rest of the year, that doesn't make any sense. There's no purpose to that. It's just, you know, change for the sake of change. And I just don't see that making any sense. And I also know that Peter Angelos is always reluctant to pay off contracts to guys who aren't actually working for him. So he would have to pay Buck for the rest of the year. And I know he probably doesn't want to do that. He's notoriously cheap about stuff like that. So I would be surprised if anything happens to him. But I guess the Orioles do need to be thinking about the long-term solution at manager. When they hired Buck Showalter, it wasn't like people were exactly lining up to be the next Orioles manager. And he had been out of the game for a while. I think he was working at ESPN. So he sort of jumped at the chance. But I don't know that they have a lot of experience. You know, I don't think they're going to have a Buck Showalter situation again this time around, because they're, you know, a good, experienced manager who's just sort of waiting around for a job. I don't think there's all that many of them out there.
No, and the trend seems to be now to go after, you know, recently retired players like an Aaron Boone or, you know, recently Brad Ausmus. So Brady Anderson would definitely fit that kind of mold, because there really aren't that many, like you said, you know, longtime baseball guys who just kind of go from team to team and stay 5 or 6 years as manager and then move on. So I would agree with you that the Orioles probably will try to go younger. Maybe it is Brady Anderson, maybe it's someone else, but that does seem to be the trend, to kind of bring in new thinking and a new approach to the game that maybe the older school guys, at least by reputation, or to generalize, you know, that generation of manager doesn't see the game the same way as some of these younger managers. I know Buck is really into studying the game, and he's friendly to analytics and that type of thing, which is actually pretty rare for a manager of his standing and longevity to have that kind of approach to the game. But it'll be interesting to watch.
One name that's come up a few times, I've seen a couple of national writers broach this topic, and that's Cal Ripken Jr. And of course, Cal Ripken Jr. and Brady Anderson are best friends. So if Brady Anderson does become the guy in charge in the warehouse, maybe he wants to bring in his pal to head up the team. Maybe Cal is interested in being a manager. That one to me doesn't make a lot of sense from Ripken's perspective, because again, he'd be coming into a situation where he's guaranteed to lose for several years. I mean, there's not really any chance that they're going to do anything positive over the next few years. So does he really want to come in as an Oriole legend and just kind of sully his reputation by being, you know, a manager to lose 90 plus games for three straight years, only get fired or something like that? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, they're at a point now where I think a caretaker manager is what they're going to need, you know, somebody who's there until they're ready to win again in a few years.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. And I mean, thinking about the Braves, that's what they kind of did with Brian Snitker, or that was their intent anyway, was after they fired Freddie Gonzalez, who they thought was going to be the heir apparent to Bobby Cox. They fired Freddie, and then they hired Brian Snitker as interim, and then they've given him a couple of one-year contracts, thinking he would be a caretaker, and then they would go get a guy like Buck Showalter or whoever. And then, lo and behold, the Braves are overachieving, and Brian Snitker all of a sudden looks like a great manager. So, well, maybe not a great manager, but a solid manager. And so it could be one of those things where a guy like Cal Ripken or any other caretaker manager ends up, you know, through trades or whatever, gets to manage a team that kind of comes into its own a year or two ahead of schedule, and things just kind of build on themselves that way. I don't know what Cal Ripken's desires are, whether if he does manage, he only wants to manage a team that's ready to win, or whether he would be willing to kind of teach these youngsters how to play. And I'm sure a lot of players would love to play for a Hall of Fame manager just to pick his brain and get his insight. So there would be some positives to having a guy like Cal Ripken manage a losing team, because a lot of these guys who have been through rebuilds will tell you that the things you learn while you're losing and how to approach the game can really pay off later when you start to win. So Ripken could be a guy who could plant some of those seeds and bring some of these younger guys along, if that's something he's willing to do. But if he just wants to be with a winner, then probably not. But like I said, I've also never talked to Cal Ripken about this, so it would be all speculation. But I would, if I was a player, I would want to play for Cal Ripken, but it's just a matter of what Cal's going
to
want.
And just to bring things full circle, Cal Ripken, of course, was on that 1988 team, and the first manager of that 1988 team was Cal Ripken Sr., who got fired, I think, like 8 games into the season or something like that, some ridiculously short amount of time. And I know that Cal Jr. was bitter about that for a long time, and I think he's pretty much gotten over it by this point. But in any case, that brings us back to the 1988 Orioles and the parallels between these two teams. And maybe the parallels will extend to next year, and the Orioles will surprise everybody and contend like they did in 1989. But I'm having trouble seeing that happening, to be honest.
Well, did anyone really see it happening in 89? I mean, obviously that was way before, you know, the internet and Twitter and all that. But I mean, as a 12-year-old back then, I remember being surprised that the Orioles were so good in 89. I remember they went to the last weekend of the season in contention.
Yeah.
I mean, but there was definitely no hint at the end of 88 that 89 was going to be a positive year. So, but that's the great thing about baseball. It's like, you think you know how things are going to turn out, and a lot of times they turn out exactly like you think, but sometimes they turn out exactly the opposite of what you think. And it's that mystery that kind of keeps us watching. So who knows what will happen to the Orioles next year. But I'm sure you and all your listeners will watch regardless. And if it's bad, you'll feel the pain. But if it's good, you'll be surprised.
Yeah, in 1989, of course, I should add that the Yankees weren't exactly at their Yankeeest then. And the Red Sox weren't a great team at that era either. It was kind of a mediocre Blue Jays team that ended up winning the division. And I think that's going to be a big difference between 1989 and 2019, is that the Orioles are going to be competing with the juggernauts from New York and Boston that are bound to be very, very good. So it's a whole different ball game, as they say. Well, Jason, yeah. We tried to come up with some positive things to say about the Orioles, and I think we mostly failed. There's not a lot positive to say about this team right now, but we gave it a try, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.